Okay, so today we're going to do a deep dive into some of Jesus's most challenging teachings. You know the ones in Mark chapters 12 and 13?
Yeah, those are always...
a lot to unpack there.
They are tough ones. But they're so full of surprises, too. Right. Like, I mean, you've got everything in there from, like, Jesus's really harsh critique of the religious leaders to, you know, the lesson about generosity from that poor widow and then all the predictions about the end of the world. It's a lot.
Yeah, it really is. And to help us sort through all of it, we have a lecture from Dr. Mark Jennings. He's a really great scholar of the Gospel of Mark, and he always brings such a cool perspective.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Jennings is the best. One of the things that really stuck out to me in his lecture was how he connected Jesus's condemnation of the scribes in chapter 12 to the teachings about the end times in 13.
Oh, interesting. I mean, those seem like separate topics to me.
Yeah, they do, right? But he actually sees this really powerful link between them, like they're two sides of the same coin, kind of.
Okay, well, I'm intrigued. Let's start with the scribes then. I mean, Jesus does not hold back, does he? He tells his followers to beware of the scribes.
Yeah.
And then just launches into this, like, scathing critique of their hypocrisy.
I know, right? It's intense. He calls them out for their obsession with appearances, like how they love wearing fancy clothes, getting the special greetings in public, and always wanting the best seats at banquets. They're so focused on status, like they just want to project this image of authority and importance.
And then it gets even more serious. He accuses them of devouring widows' houses while they're pretending to be all righteous. I mean, that is a huge accusation, especially considering the scribes are supposed to be the experts in the law.
Exactly. And that's what makes it so hypocritical, right? Because the Mosaic law actually has all these rules to protect widows because they were seen as super vulnerable in society. So for the scribes to be exploiting them, it's like the opposite of what they're supposed to be doing.
It's like they're using their religious authority to make themselves rich at the expense of the people they should be helping. And I mean, this isn't an isolated thing either. It connects back to all the other times when Jesus condemned the temple and its leadership. It's like a pattern of challenging those in power who abuse their position.
For sure. And, you know, that theme of hypocrisy and true faith becomes even more clear when you look at the story of the widow's offering, which comes right after Jesus denounces the scribes.
Oh, yeah. This story, it always gets to me.
Okay.
So Jesus is watching people put their offerings into the temple treasury, right? And you've got these wealthy people giving big amounts and making a show of it.
Yeah. Dr. Jennings mentioned how the coins they were using would have made this loud clanging sound when they hit the treasury chest. So it's like they wanted everyone to hear how much they were giving.
It's all about outward appearances again. But then this poor widow comes along and puts in two tiny copper coins, like the smallest amount.
Right. Which together they were worth less than a penny. But Dr. Jennings' point is that this little offering was literally everything this woman had. She gave her whole livelihood, holding nothing back.
It's just so powerful. Such a contrast to the rich people who probably just gave a small percentage of their wealth. The widow wasn't trying to impress anyone. It was an act of pure faith and trust in God.
It really makes you think, like, who's really being generous here? The ones making a big deal about their money? Or the one who gives everything she has, even though she has so little?
It's a big question. And it challenges us to think about our own giving. You know, are we giving to get attention and praise? Or are we giving out of love for God and a desire to truly help others?
Yeah, it really is a powerful reminder that, you know, true generosity, it's not about the amount. It's about where your heart is at.
Mm.
So Dr. Jennings goes on from there to connect this to Jesus's big speech about the end times in Mark 13. And the whole thing starts with the disciples asking about when the temple will be destroyed. And, you know, it's so interesting because the way they ask the question, you can tell they assume that the temple being destroyed is the same thing as the world ending.
Oh, so they thought it would all happen at once.
Yeah, like one big event. But Dr. Jennings points out that Jesus actually makes a distinction between those two things. Like when he talks about wars and famines and earthquakes, those aren't signs that the end is happening right then.
Yeah.
He actually calls them birth pains, which I always thought was an interesting way to put it. But basically, it means there's going to be this period of like turmoil and chaos before the end, but it's not the end itself.
So like a process.
Yeah.
With the destruction of the temple as one big event in that process, but not the final thing.
Right, exactly. And when he's talking about the temple being destroyed, Jesus gives this very specific warning sign that his followers should watch for. It's what he calls the abomination of desolation, standing where it ought not to be.
That phrase always kind of creeps me out. What did he mean by that?
Well, it's a phrase that has a lot of history in Jewish tradition. It goes all the way back to the book of Daniel. And it usually refers to the temple being desecrated with pagan idols and practices. Like, it was seen as a sign that God was judging them.
I see.
And Dr. Jennings thinks that Jesus is using that phrase to refer to the Roman siege of Jerusalem in 70 AD, which is what ultimately led to the temple being destroyed.
All right.
And he really emphasizes how Jesus specifically tells his followers to run away from Judea when they see that sign. It's a very practical warning, you know, get out before the destruction comes.
Yeah, it makes you think about how important it is to be able to recognize those warning signs in our own lives, too. You know, those times when we need to step back or change course to avoid disaster.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, it's important to remember that even though the destruction of the temple was a huge deal for the Jewish people, it wasn't the end of the world, like Jesus describes it later on.
So then what does he say are the real signs of the end times?
Oh, man, he gets really cosmic. He talks about the sun going dark, the moon not giving off light, stars falling from the sky. It's like those huge apocalyptic visions you see in the Old Testament.
Sounds intense, like the whole natural order is falling apart.
Exactly. And then in the middle of all that chaos, the ultimate sign is that the Son of Man will arrive, Jesus returning in glory. He makes it really clear, like, there'll be no mistaking it. You won't need to interpret anything.
No more cryptic signs or trying to decode prophecies. It'll just be obvious.
Exactly. And this is where he warns everyone about being tricked by false prophets or people who say they know exactly when the end is coming, which I think is a really relevant message even now, you know, with all the doomsday predictions and conspiracy theories out there.
Yeah, good point. It reminds us to be careful and to really test everything against what the Bible says and what we know about God's character.
Definitely. And instead of worrying about when the end will come, Jesus wants his followers to focus on being watchful and prepared, like servants who are waiting for their master to come home.
It's not about being afraid or anxious. It's more about being ready and trusting that God is in control no matter what happens in the future. It's a really cool image, that sense of, you know, waiting and being ready. So if we're not supposed to be worried about predicting the end, how does Dr. Jennings say we should live because of these teachings?
Well, he really emphasizes that we need to focus on the stuff we can actually control, like our own actions and the choices we make. And he points out that all of this stuff we've been talking about, you know, the scribes, the widow's offering, and the end times, they all kind of point to the same basic message.
What's that?
Authentic faith. It's not about, like, outward appearances or doing a bunch of religious rituals. And it's not about trying to figure out the future either. It's about really aligning our hearts and our actions with, like, the values of God's kingdom. Well, you know, caring for people who are vulnerable, being genuinely generous, taking a stand against hypocrisy and injustice, and living in a state of readiness, not for the world to end, but for all those chances we get to show God's love here and now.
So it's about living with a sense of urgency, but not because the world might be ending soon, but because every moment is like a chance to make a difference, to show what God is like.
Exactly. And that sense of urgency should also make us want to take a look at our own lives, too, to see if there are any abominations of desolation hiding in our own hearts.
Okay, let's talk about that for a second. We talked about the abomination of desolation in terms of the temple. But what does that even mean for us personally?
It's basically anything that twists or corrupts something that should be sacred. It could be greed, envy, pride, hatred, anything that takes us away from love and leads us toward destroying ourselves. It's the stuff that makes us a part of those systems and structures that, you know, exploit people and leave others out.
So it's not just about, like, individual sins, but also seeing how what we do contributes to a bigger culture of, you know, desolation.
Right. And the challenge is to be aware of that. To keep looking at our motives and the choices we make and ask ourselves, am I making things worse or am I helping to make them better?
That's a big challenge for sure. And it can feel overwhelming. But I also feel like there's a message of hope in all of this. The fact that Jesus even warns us about this stuff, that he wants us to be watchful and prepared, it makes it seem like we have a choice, that we can choose a different way.
Totally. And I think the ultimate hope is that the story doesn't end with desolation. It ends with Christ coming back and everything being made new and good, triumphing over evil.
So it's about holding on to that hope, even when we face darkness in the world and in ourselves.
Exactly. And remembering that we don't have to go through this alone. We have each other. We have the Bible to guide us, and we have God's Spirit to give us strength.
Well, this deep dive has definitely given me a lot to think about. It's amazing how these teachings from so long ago can still be so relevant to our lives today.
It really shows how powerful Jesus' words are and how timeless his message is.
So as we wrap things up, What would you say are the most important things we learned from exploring Mark 12 and 13 with Dr. Jennings?
I think it comes down to this. Real faith is about more than just looking religious or going through the motions. It's about making our hearts and our actions match up with what God's kingdom is all about. Compassion, generosity, justice, and being humble.
And it's about paying attention both to what's going on around us and what's going on inside of us, so we can recognize and fight against those things that threaten to destroy everything good and beautiful, those abominations of desolation.
Yeah, and most importantly, it's about living with hope, trusting that even when things are chaotic and uncertain, God is working to redeem and restore everything.
That's a really powerful message to take away from this. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep searching, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep.